Welcome back to the Hollow Sky Podcast. We're your hosts. I'm Steven.
And Kyle.
And if you're here, you know what that means. It's Monday, Hollow Cult. You've chosen us to hang out with you to get you through the work week with a little bit of weirdness, a little bit of strangeness. Hopefully we live up to that on our end. If you're new here, me and Kyle do a little housekeeping in the beginning. It takes a little bit. So if you want to get to the crux of the show, you can fast forward 5 or 6 minutes and you'll kind of be right there. If you want to hang out and listen to us jabber, feel free. If you're not new here, welcome back, you weirdo. We're glad to have you. Welcome back. That being said, getting through it, welcome to the show. Forgot what I was going to say. Check us out at all our social medias, Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, Twitter, TikTok, Discord, Reddit. Search up the Hollow Sky Podcast. Join the cult. Be part of the community. It's a good time. If you have a paranormal experience you'd like for us to feature on a future episode of the show and share with the Hollow Cult, Kyle's got some details for you.
I do. HollowSkyPodcast@gmail.com. Write that story out in as much detail as you possibly can. Shoot it over so we can make you famous. Duh.
It's what we do.
It's literally what we do every day.
It's the only thing we're good at.
Making everybody else famous.
That hurt. That hurt. But yeah, if you'd like to support this little endeavor, this journey that we're all on, check us out at Patreon. $7 a month. You get Patreon exclusive episodes. You get all these goodies, all these regular episodes early and ad free. You get some casket breath jams, you get like merch drop information, all kinds of stuff over there. It's a good time. Go check it out. HollowSkyPodcast.com. We got a store up. Go over there and rep some merch. Get some Hollow Cult merch, shirts, hats, beanies, stickers, anything your heart desires. You can find over there. Best thing you can do is share the show word of mouth. Just keep the name going. Share the lives. Share the drops. Just keep putting it out there. If you follow any paranormal pages, listen to any other paranormal podcasts, just keep throwing us out there. We appreciate all the hard work you guys are doing, keeping our name in everybody's ears. Love it. You can also go to anywhere you listen to podcasts and leave us a 5-star rating and review. And when I find them, I will gladly shout you out. Right now, I'm going through some Facebooks. You can rate and review the page on Facebook as well. If you're into Facebook, we won't judge you. No. On that note, this week's 5-star rating and review comes to us from our Facebook pal, Paul. Paul says, the best podcast around, covering topics on cryptids, the paranormal, and just downright strange. Steve and Kyle host their show in a way that you feel like you're hanging out with a couple of your best buds. 5 stars. Well, Paul, you are our best bud. The whole Hollow Cult is our best bud. We love just kicking it with you. Just hanging out, doing cool stuff, talking about weird stuff. It's pretty sick and fly.
It really is. It's the best cult to be a part of.
I can attest to that.
Except everyone.
Yeah. Come join us. Join us. Another way you can support the show is by supporting our lovely sponsors, which you will hear about right now. Hey, Hollow Cult, fall is here, and with it comes those cooler nights, heartier meals, and the craving for something warm and satisfying. That's where HelloFresh comes in, bringing you comforting chef design recipes and fresh seasonal ingredients right to your front door. This season, they've taken things to the next level with their biggest menu refresh yet. Say hello to a whole new way to do dinner. This menu refresh has made things bigger, healthier, and tastier. The menu doubled to over 100 weekly options, with larger portions and global seasonal recipes. More high-protein veggie-packed meals, with at least 2 veggies per recipe. The weekly steak and seafood menu has been upgraded, with 3 times more seafood than before, plus fresh seasonal produce at no extra cost. This week, we tried the Hey Honey Salmon, and it was wonderful. The spice-rubbed salmon was crispy and flaky, and it paired great with the lemon honey Dijon sauce. The green beans added a nice, fresh veggie element to the meal. And I mean, who doesn't like potato wedges, right? It was easy to prep and delicious to eat. The best way to cook just got better. Go to HelloFresh.com/Hollow1Pod10FM now to get 10 free meals plus a free item for life. One per box with active subscription. Free meals applied as a discount on the first box. New subscribers only, varies by plan. That's HelloFresh.com/HOLO1Pod10FM to get 10 free meals plus a free item for life. Hey, Hollow Cult. Let me tell you about the online cannabis company that's revolutionizing how we deal with life's challenges. From sleepless nights to stress-filled days, Mood.com has created an entire line of functional gummies that target specific health concerns with 100% federally legal THC blends. They'll deliver them discreetly to your front doorstep. And you can get them 20% off your first order at Mood.com with promo code HOLO. Having trouble sleeping? They've got a gummy for that. Sleepy Time gummies knock you out in about 15 minutes. They leave you feeling refreshed, and they don't leave you with a feeling of grogginess or hangover. Having just one of those days where just everybody sucks and everything is going wrong, you just need to reset your mood and your day as a whole. They've got gummy for that too. Epic Euphoria gummies just reset your mood and turn your frown upside down. What makes these different is how they've paired THC with other cannabinoids, with herbs and adaptogens. You're just not going to find gummies like this in a dispensary or anywhere for that matter. And they have gummies for literally everything. Immune support, menopause relief, PMS symptoms, mental clarity, sexual arousal. And each one is crafted using federally legal cannabis grown on small, family-owned American farms. No pesticides, no BS, and they can ship to most states in the U.S. Best of all, not only does Mood stand behind everything with an industry-leading 100-day satisfaction guarantee, but as I mentioned, Hollow Cult listeners get 20% off their first order with code HOLO. So head to Mood.com, browse their amazing selection of functional gummies, and find the perfect gummy for whatever you're dealing with. And remember to use promo code HOLO at checkout to save 20% on your first order. All right, just like that, we are back. So today for the show, I've kind of dove into something that I'm interested in, but hadn't really, I guess, looked into a whole lot. And I've kind of been on this route of like spirit communication. So the whole concept of that is really interesting to me, whether it be like talking to dead loved ones or talking to other entities in other realms. Like the whole concept of that has just been really playing on my brain a lot lately. And I've been kind of looking into YouTube and podcasts and stuff. And the Newkirks over at Haunted Objects are releasing a 4-part series about like electronic communication with spirits. And in true Newkirk fashion, like they've put in the research, the production quality is great. I suggest go over there and check it out. It is mint. They know what they're doing over there. It is good. But on that note, I'm not going to go down the electric voice phenomenon or any of that. I'm going to go kind of back to the beginning, talk about some Ouija boards. I got it to start, get some interesting little tidbits, some cases. I'm going to make a multi-parter out of this. Today, we're just going to kind of do some light, fun stuff. Next week, it's going to get into some not so light, fun stuff. And then we're just going to go off the rails after that.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's where I love to be, is way off the rails.
Yeah. That's what we kind of do. So, in the 1800s, advertisements for a new paranormal product started appearing in the papers. Quote, Ouija, or the wonderful talking board, boomed a Pittsburgh toy and novelty shop, describing magical device that answered questions, quote, concerning the past, present, and future with marvelous accuracy, and provided a link which unites the known with the unknown, the material with the immaterial. So that's pretty good advertisements in the 1800s. It's going to catch your eye.
That's a long time ago. I didn't realize that it was that long ago.
Yeah. Yeah. Another advertisement in a New York newspaper declared it, quote, interesting and mysterious, and testified that it had been, quote, proven at a patent office before patent was allowed. Price, $1.50.
I wonder what prompted this individual to create a Ouija board.
Well, funny that you ask, because the concept of, like, I guess spirit contacting and spirit writing, which is kind of what a Ouija board is, you know, is not, it's old. Like, I didn't realize that it went so far back.
I figured it did go far back. That's why I was kind of curious as to where this particular person drew the idea from, or, you know,
like came up with it. I think it came to a point to make spirit communication marketable.
But it's such a weird niche to try to punch into. Because at the same time, you would almost feel like it's taboo.
Interestingly enough, it only kind of started grabbing, like, real public negative context recently. Like,
really?
Fairly recently. Yeah, I kind of get into that later on.
That's interesting.
Yeah. So some of the ancient cultures that kind of delved into spirit communication. First, we have ancient China with this form of planchette writing called Fuji. And it's from the Liu Song dynasty, which ran from 420 to 479 AD, probably older, but they're just kind of ballparking it there.
That's old as fuck.
Yeah, that's a long time ago.
Could you imagine being, like, an archaeologist and digging up a fucking hyper ancient Ouija board?
And this isn't exactly a Ouija board, but the way that they did it,
the equivalent of,
yeah, they suspended a stylus or a stick held by two people. So two people were holding, like, a rope with a suspended stick, and it was over either sand or ashes. And as they held it there, it would begin to move and it would write things in the sand.
And that's cool.
Yeah. They would take that as, like, messages from deities or from spirits or ancients. And
it's like using a planchette.
Yeah, exactly. Having
multiple people on it. And at the same time, almost like dowsing rods.
Yep. And they believed it was a way to receive, like, messages or divine guidance from spirits and deities. There was also something similar in ancient Greece and Rome, where they used oracles and prophetic writings, which that's old, 800 BCE to 400 CE. While not necessarily, like, automatic writing in a sense, but these oracles would enter, like, trance states, and they would receive messages from deities that they would later on write out. Like, they would be told what to write. So it was kind of like using the person as the medium to get the information out there. In the Middle East, you had the jinn and possession writings through Islamic traditions, which started around the 7th century. Writings claimed to be through possessed people that were possessed by the jinn. Some Sufi mystics and Islamic cultists received writings believed to be divinely or supernaturally inspired. Has something similar in India, where ancient seers claimed to hear or receive divine knowledge called Sruti. Apologize if I pronounced that wrong. And they would write down similar messages received through deities. You get into medieval Europe, where you have saints and mystics receiving divine dictations from God and from other saints. And it kind of goes on from there into... So
in a roundabout way, almost every religion / civilization has had a form of spirit communication at one point or another.
Yeah, pretty much.
I am really, really interested in trying to figure out when and why it became taboo. Cause that has been a topic that I think forever fascinates me, because you have in modern day religion, that it is an extreme taboo, so much so that it's considered a sin and you're not supposed to dabble at all with it.
Yep.
And I've always wondered the logic behind that.
Yep. I think it kind of plays out from the Catholic Church and their views on like spiritualism and,
right.
how, and how you're not supposed to like go to any other sources essentially, but like aside from God. But it's weird because like in medieval Europe, you literally had like saints receiving messages from God, but that, I don't know, it gets a real weird gray area there.
And that's what is so interesting to me, is that it is kind of this gray area. And I'm just really interested in that topic, because I don't believe that it's fair. Like if I were to sit and have a conversation with somebody about it that is on the far religious side, which I'm 100% fine with, if I were to have a conversation with someone like that, I would want to make it very clear. You do not get to use "because God said so." You can't. That equates to nothing to me. You have to have definitive reasons as to why.
Yeah. And I feel like that's going to stop a lot of people in their defense.
Most people, I believe so. I do think that there are people out there who are well-read enough that would be able to continue the conversation, because the whole point of that conversation is, the way I would approach it is that I'm attempting to educate myself.
There's a priest going around making the rounds on podcasts. It was on Sean Ryan. I think it was on Blurry Creatures. His name is Father Dan Rehill, and he goes on there and he puts forward a pretty good case as to why they think you shouldn't mess around specifically with Ouija boards and like psychics or anything. And I'll get into that in tomorrow's episode. Go down the realm of the not so good Ouija experiences. I suggest definitely go listen to those. I think he was on Sean Ryan. I know he was on Sean Ryan. I think he was on Blurry Creatures too.
So I'll have to check that out.
Look it up.
Also, real quick, another question I would be interested in is, you stated that saints, and we've all heard that, where saints have had communications with God, so on and so forth. So my question would be, if you compared that to conversations through a Ouija board, because my initial thought here is, well, who's to say that every communication through a Ouija board has to be negative, right? Well, the same could be said with saints acquiring information from God. How did they know specifically that this is a positive entity and not a negative entity?
Yep.
Where like, and it's just something I would be interested in hearing from some, like the only thing that is going to weigh in on that topic is either somebody who's had that happen to them where they've communicated with God, or someone who is highly researched in those topics.
Yeah.
With firsthand accounts from these saints,
which is like listening to Dan Rehill talk about it. It is in a very religious context, but he does make some interesting points.
I'll have to definitely,
if you go down that route.
Yeah. I'll definitely have to listen to that, because I'm, it's always been a topic that is extremely curious to me.
It delves into it goes quickly into angels and demons, right?
Of course.
So as he's sitting there talking to Sean, he's like, there are at least three guardian angels in this room, and there's just as many demons in this room. And he's like, that you have to understand that they're around you all the time, and they're constantly absorbing and picking up everything that you're saying. Everything that happens in your life, both of these entities are consuming. He's like, so when you go to a psychic or you use a Ouija board and they tell you that your grandmother is communicating with you, your grandmother wants to talk to you, he said, your grandmother doesn't want to talk to you. If she's in heaven, she's happy. She's there. She's going to stay there. She's not going to try to reach out to you. He says it doesn't matter. Like, it doesn't negate how much she loved you, but she is at the place where she has always wanted to be. And then he said, if she's in purgatory, she can't contact you. She is in purgatory. You need to pray for her. Like, and this is from a Catholic context, of course, because he's a Catholic priest.
Right.
And he's like, the other option is she's in hell and she's never getting out of there. She can't contact you from there. He's like, so who you're communicating with is not who you think you're communicating with. He says, you're communicating with a demon that's posing as your grandmother, who has taken in all this information, all this knowledge that you think he wouldn't know, but in your lifetime, it is absorbed while just kind of being in the periphery of your existence.
But don't you feel like that's also kind of arrogant to say, considering the fact that he's stated there are three angels and three demons in the room? Therefore, by statistics alone, you have a 50-50 shot of communicating with negative or positive.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
you know what I mean?
Exactly, like, but yeah.
You like it, like, you have to prove to me that this is like, you would have to come up with a way to figure out which one you're talking to at yeah. that point. You like, I don't know. Cause it's a weird line of thinking. It's like assuming that every car is a bad car.
Cause Sean, you gotta give Sean credit. Cause he's pretty yeah. open-minded about it, but he's like, so essentially you're saying that psychics are a demonic tool. And the guy's like, yeah. Yeah.
I don't believe that. I don't believe that every mystic capability is always negative. I just don't buy that. And that's why I would be curious to have conversations. It would be really interesting to get somebody on the show that is very well versed, like annoyingly so well versed in these topics.
Yeah.
You know, for us to roll these questions at them and really dig into the topic.
Yeah.
And kind of see where the fallout lands. I think it would be really, really interesting.
Yeah. And you have to take what he's saying with a grain of salt, because he does have for lack of a better term, a narrative to push, because he is a Catholic priest and he has to go by that, you know, so it's
and you also have to give people grace, because we all operate with a selective set of lenses.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. That's like we all view the world extremely different. And so we have to give each other grace in these conversations 100%. And realize that this is why, you know, we feel the way that we do. And we all that, you know, it just,
yeah.
And there's not enough of that in these conversations.
No. But. And it's always interesting and refreshing to get different perspectives.
Absolutely.
You know, which is why I think that stood out so much to me. Cause you're getting it from, like, he is an exorcist. I can't remember his name again. Father Rehill. He is an exorcist. He's been in on exorcisms, because that's kind of what the show's about.
Okay.
And
okay.
They kind of delve off onto like spiritualism and contacting spirits and stuff. So definitely worth checking out.
Yeah. I would really be interested in hunting somebody down that's really, really, really well versed and very open minded too. I don't want like a 24/7 lecture of why we need to follow Christ.
Yeah, and I feel just like, I know he's out there to send a message and, like, again, push a narrative, but the fact that he's even like open to like having conversations from both sides is pretty interesting.
That's awesome.
All right, back to the 1800s and the Ouija board. I'm going to go off Wikipedia here. The Ouija, also known as the Ouija board, the spirit board, the talking board, or the witch board, is a flat board marked with letters of the alphabet, the numbers 0 through 9, the words yes, no, and occasionally hello and goodbye, along with various symbols and graphics. It uses a planchette, which is a small heart-shaped piece of wood or plastic, as a movable indicator to spell out messages during a seance. Participants place their fingers lightly on the planchette, which is moved about the board to spell words. The name Ouija is a trademark of Hasbro, inherited from Parker Brothers, but is often used to generically refer to any kind of modern talking board. So what kind of sparked this off was the 1800s, you know, the Civil War was going on and you had hundreds of thousands of Americans dying. So you had mass deaths in the Civil War, which sparked a widespread desire to want to contact dead loved ones. People really got sad. Like everybody, they were losing sons, they were losing fathers, they were losing brothers. And mediums kind of began capitalizing on that.
And didn't realize that that would be a thing.
Yeah. When I read that, it's
It's also extremely interesting that there was this culture, like almost cultural movement, where people turned to like mysticism and in like this taboo area. It's very bizarre to think that in an entire country essentially over a tragedy decides to turn to, I guess, what I would call mysticism.
And up until up until a very specific point, Ouija board sales would spike based on the geopolitical activity going on, like around the Vietnam War. Ouija board sales spiked.
See, and that right there, Steve, that could be an argument as to why someone would say don't use them. Because tragedy facilitates opportunity, right? Yeah. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So I could definitely, like, if you were going to run that argument at me, all right, you might have a leg to stand on here.
Yeah.
I might fuck with that.
Yeah.
Because that creates an opportunity for evil to leech itself in. I get that. All right, cool. We're on to something here.
So post the Civil War, everybody knows someone that's died. These mediums begin marketing their services around major cities. So that was kind of the first time, the Civil War was kind of the first time that like real significant, I mean, it could be, there's other things that could be argued, but like real significant mass death like happened in the US like that. So there's this guy, his name's Robert Murch, and he's like the leading Ouija board historian. And a lot of these statistics and quotes come from him. So many families had to grapple with like losing loved ones. And not only that, losing loved ones and their like bodies never being recovered. They don't have any closure. You know, these guys went off to war and a lot of them just didn't come back. So you don't have any closure from death. So they started moving to like seances and mediums and stuff to try to contact, to like get that closure, you know,
I'm sorry. That is so weird to me. Cause it's not weird for like you and me, but it's just like when you think of Gen Pop and you think of a massive amount of people that just turn to like, let's talk to the dead,
bro.
It's so like, that fucks my head up.
Wait till you hear the numbers. What's the most popular board game of all time?
I don't know. Monopoly?
Monopoly. There's years when Ouija boards outsold Monopoly exponentially.
That's crazy.
Crazy.
That is crazy to me. Yeah. And then if you I'm going to make this episode unnecessarily long because I'm so, I am so vested in it. I think it just because it adds this element, the way that we're approaching it as like almost theology and like us trying to tap into the greater existence of mankind. I think that's like, it's just super fascinating to me and I love it. It's just crazy that people turned like just for whatever reason, they turn to this taboo subject to communicate with the dead. It's just weird because you would think by statistics, the majority of people, it's like, because look at how in the past, how people looked at witchcraft, especially in America.
Yep.
Like we would burn and drown people for witchcraft. But for some reason, Ouija board almost gets a pass. You know what I mean?
For a long
I
guess.
Yeah. It's. I don't know, it's fucking fascinating.
There's one pivotal movement, one pivotal moment that changed everyone's perspective on the Ouija board.
Really? I'm excited to hear it.
Yeah. I mean, of course you had like people of like Christian faith and Catholic faith who frowned on it. But up to that point, it was very much like an accepted thing. Anyway, so all this mass death, no closure, people started like leaning toward devices like dowsing rods and pendulums and Ouija boards to get answers that they couldn't get from the physical world. Like, it gave people a peace of mind because they didn't get an answer the other way. Your dad could go off to war and that, like, he walks out the door, you never see him again. You don't know if he's dead. You don't know if he's alive. You don't get anything. It's just emptiness, which is almost worse than knowing someone has passed away, you know?
For sure.
So people started reaching out to these alternate methods of communication, and it just kind of spiraled from there. And then, like, around the 19th century in the 1800s, you get this rise and obsession with spiritualism, which we talked about heavily in the lead mask case. Like, I'll bring it up later, but go back and listen to that case and you can see the how big spiritualism really was. And that's now, which is a fraction of what it was in the 1800s, because people were really leaning into it. And spiritualism, I'll go into a little bit, is the belief that the dead are able to communicate with the living. Spiritualists in the United States believe that the dead are able to contact the living and reportedly use talking boards very similar to the modern Ouija at their camps in Ohio, which is kind of where the spiritualism movement started in 1886, with the intent of enabling faster communication with spirits. So that's where the OG kind of board came from.
And like we were talking about, I think it was off air, but regardless, like we were talking about how the board is a tool, and it almost more easily facilitates that conversation. Whereas, like we were talking about, people who are mediums or mystics, that requires your brain to be operating on a different level, where most people aren't to that level to be able to achieve these quicker results. Therefore, it's almost like your Ouija board is like a game genie.
Exactly.
That's giving you the cheat codes. You know what I mean? The easy path.
That's exactly what they were going for.
I feel that, you know, I fuck with that idea.
Yep. No, that's exactly what they were going for.
Yeah.
A little more about spiritualism as a social religious movement, according to Wikipedia, popular in the 19th and 20th centuries, according to which an individual's awareness persists after death and may be contacted by the living. The afterlife, or the spirit world, is seen by spiritualists not as a static place, but one which spirits continue to interact and evolve. These two beliefs, that contact with spirits is possible and that spirits are more advanced than humans, lead spiritualists to the belief that spirits are capable of advising the living on moral and ethical issues, as well as theology kind of stuff, like the nature of God. And some spiritualists follow actual spirit guides, very specific spirits they rely upon for spiritual direction and life direction.
I was going to bring that up too, about how cultures throughout time have always leaned on like their ancestors and their spirit guides and stuff like that to help them through hardships and celebrations and shit like that. So, and then even like, I don't know that it's a fair equation to the topic of spiritualism, but like what we know today, as far as like quantum physics go, like, I feel like even that could have a root in at least the assumption that spirits, like our essence, once we are extinguished, has the ability to somehow, in some way, make contact with the energy that ties us to, like, because like you and my friendship has a forming function in my life that will always have an energetic pool. You know what I'm saying? So like, it's hard for me to believe that once one of us dies, that one of those tethers to this world is just forever gone.
Just severed. Yeah.
And it like kind of that how you talk about the priest was like, you know, your grandmother's in heaven. She could give a fuck less now. Like that fucks me up a little bit.
Yeah. I think
of course, he didn't say it like that, but that to me, that's like that. Those are the words that I hear. Like, she's in a better place. She'd give a fuck less about what you're doing down here on earth. I don't believe that, because the people that we surround ourselves with in life mean so much. Because and I know you feel the same way about yours. I know for a fact that if it came down to it and I had to scorch earth, the planet, for mine, I would do it without a moment's notice.
Yep.
Without question. I don't care that they're mine.
Yep.
I'm the same way. The people in my life mean that fucking much to me that I would go scorched earth for them.
Yep. Cause you could tell he had to double back where like, oh, it doesn't say anything about how much she loves you, but she's just where she wants to be. And I'm like,
I don't know, man. I don't know. And I also know people, right? And I know that even if it's a fucking no-no, you know damn good and well that people are going to be like, you know what? He's been asking for my help for a minute. Like, I'm going to figure out how to help my dude.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because that's just how we're kind of geared. We're geared to do kind of sketch ass things once in a while, yeah. You know?
Yeah. Circling back to a spiritualist here, because Kyle kind of had touched on, they believe that spirit mediums are gifted to carry on communication between the living and the dead, but that anyone can become a medium through study and practice. They believe the spirits are capable of growth and perfection by progressing through higher spheres or planes, and that the afterlife is not a static state, but one in which the spirit evolves. So essentially, the Ouija board kind of made it easy for everyone. Like you said, a game genie.
So another real quick question. Do you think everyone has the ability to be a medium?
A medium in the...
Well, whatever the phrasing you just said, how they kind of portrayed it that everyone could be a medium, even through like study and so on and so forth.
I want to say yes.
Yeah?
I want to say yes. I feel like we all have the ability. Can everybody tap into that ability? I don't know.
I lean more to the no.
Really?
Yeah.
That's a flip-flop of us.
Yeah. Not that. I don't know. I feel like certain people just fucking have it. You know what I'm saying? It's like
funny that you say that, right?
It's like it's the difference in how you take Michael Jordan and me. Like that motherfucker he's naturally gifted. Like we all know somebody in our life that is just ridiculously naturally gifted at something. And that's not to, you know, maybe there is an argument that we can learn, because most people, like I could learn to play the guitar, but I'll never be better than best guitarist out there. You know what I'm saying?
Like, yeah. It's like, we can learn to play basketball. We can learn to be good at basketball. We might be able to even play college basketball.
We'll never be.
You're not going to be in the NBA.
No, that's what I mean. Like, I feel like some people just have a fucking knack for it. And I kind of feel like, and this may be like the whatever coming out in me. Like, I think it's a really fucking cool idea that there are just special fucking people out there.
The spiritualists kind of touch on that a little bit.
Yeah.
They say anyone can receive messages, but a medium can receive and put out messages, can actuate communication.
That's interesting.
So anyone can receive, but mediums are able to communicate.
That's also a crazy thought too, that like, you could be on the other side of the veil screaming at me and I could hear you, but I could never scream back.
Yeah. And think about things that we write off. Like, man, that was weird. It's weird that this just popped into my head right now. that I'm like, I'm not thinking about anything pertaining to it. And it pops into my head. I'm like, man, that's strange.
Or even beyond that, like think about all the times where you've been doing something and you think you hear somebody talk, or you think you hear this, or you think you hear that.
You feel something like,
yeah. And then like nothing's there. And you know, that's fucked up.
I feel like it's kind of like I almost feel like JJ would be a medium where she can contact and communicate, but like me and you, we can receive it, but we don't know how the fuck to talk back, you know?
We're out there yelling at it. They can't hear shit.
No, we're like writing it off like, oh, you know, I felt something tug on the back of my shirt. That's probably nothing, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Back to the history of spiritualism. So the beginning of modern spiritualism in America is often linked to an incident in upstate New York in 1848. Two sisters named Kate and Maggie Fox claimed that they had received messages from spirits who rapped on the walls in answer to questions that they were asking. Later, recreating this feat of channeling in parlors across the state. So they went on tour communicating with the dead via knocks on the wall. Aided by the stories about the celebrity sisters and other spiritualists, the movement reached millions of participants in the upcoming years. So spiritualism was big. It's still big, as we noticed from the lead mask case, just not necessarily so much in America anymore.
It's also weird. Like I have an issue with people like these ladies, for example, that like, almost try to like mainstream their ability and like sell it. Like I have a problem with that. I'm cool with a ghost hunting show, but I don't know. And I think it's just myself, because I have this imagery of like a real mystic or medium. Like in my head, it's this like, I'm searching for answers, and I talk to this guy, and he's like, yeah, listen, like there's a old shack out on this dirt fucking road. You're going to go there and you're going to talk to this lady, and she's going to fucking like, it's not someone that openly advertises their abilities. It's almost like this hidden little gem that you have to seek out.
Yeah. And I think it's more like that now since it became taboo, because at the time period, like spiritualism was accepted by Americans. Like it was not far-fetched for a family to hold a seance on a Saturday night and then have no qualms about going to church on Sunday morning. Yeah. Like the two were not separated the way that they are now.
And it was like when we went to that spirit conference and I had my little reading, my tarot card reading, the individual that I got my reading from was kind of like doing her own little thing. Like she wasn't like grasping for attention. She was kind of tucked in her own little, like, you know what I mean? Like, yeah, like she would move through everything by herself. Like I would,
yep.
You know, like I always move through areas like I'm a ghost. Essentially, I don't try to be noticed by anybody.
Yep. She's just who I am. Hey, would you like a reading?
No,
you went to her.
Yeah. Like I'm walking through, checking shit out, and I'm like, I feel like I need to sit down and get a reading by this woman. For some reason, I feel like this is what I need to do right now.
Yep. And at the time period in the late 1800s, early 1900s, it was even like a wholesome family activity to try to hold seances and contact spirits through automatic writing or table rapping, table turning parties, in which participants would place their hands on a table, such as a planchette, and listen as someone would call out letters of the alphabet. When the letter was called, they'd watch the table begin to shake and rattle, declaring that all of them were not moving it. So it sounds similar to you. That's kind of like, you know, what went on in the lead mask case, where they were trying to use Ouija boards to contact, granted, dead people from Mars. But regardless, the spiritualism kind of hangs together there.
It's fucking crazy that essentially used to be their family game night.
Yeah.
Like, let's just sit around and play with the Ouija board.
We would have seance parties where you get all your friends together and you would do table turning parties.
That's crazy.
If you want to listen to the Lead Mask Case, episode 277, the Lead Mask Mystery.
Sell that bitch.
Go listen to it. Spiritualist movement. Spiritualism also offered solace in an era where lifespans were much shorter than they are today. So that kind of played into it, too. We're not living as long. Notable Mary Todd Lincoln, wife of Abe Lincoln, conducted seances in the White House after their 11-year-old son died of a fever in 1862. So it was all echelons of life were trying to contact the dead through this time period.
Which crazy, mind you, if you, like for everybody listening, how many people knew that?
I knew it because I read about it before.
Right. Right. But I mean, like, that seems to be a section of
history,
history that is trying to be pushed away and yeah, quarantined.
It's crazy.
It is crazy. It's crazy that it's never like it's never openly talked about. Like it's one of them taboo topics now where they're trying to, which is fucking nuts to think about, even on a basic non-conspiratorial, just a basic human level to think about. Even though historically and factually this took place, the world goes, nah,
don't talk about it.
We're just gonna essentially not talk about it and erase it from history. That's crazy.
I'm not gonna talk about it. Which is it's bizarre, man.
It's crazy and insanely concerning.
How wild is it that like a Friday night would be spent gathering around with your family or with your best friends trying to contact the dead?
For you and me, it doesn't sound that crazy.
No.
But for everyone, that's nuts.
I can't imagine my mom being like, hey, you want to come over? I made some spaghetti. We're going to try to contact your great uncle. It's cool. You know, like.
That'd be awesome.
It's crazy.
Robin, you should do that. If you're listening, you should do that.
She is shaking her head. No, she is probably pissed off that we're even talking about a Ouija board right now.
No, I'm just saying that she should call you and just play that situation out. Not actually mean it. Just
she offers spaghetti. There better be spaghetti.
Well,
that much. Okay. So now we're kind of getting into the Ouija board world. So we talked about spiritualism, table rapping, seances. Now we're coming into the Ouija board where people are starting to see that Americans are very interested in contacting the dead. How can we make money on it? So a couple of men in Baltimore started the Kennard Novelty Company, the first producers of a Ouija board in the late 19th century. So when that came out, contacting demons and opening the gates of hell was kind of like not in their periphery, which is what Ouija boards are known for now, oddly enough, interestingly enough.
And at the time was like religion was a big staple then, right?
Yeah. It just like it wasn't a big taboo. Deal.
Okay.
Cause that was like the point that Robert Murch was trying to make is like, it was so widely accepted in society that like, it didn't go against like Christian dogma. Like you could hold a seance party right before you, or right after you came home from church.
That's
the two things wild. Were not separated. Let's see here. Yeah, they weren't, as stated in this article that I pulled, they weren't interested in opening the gates of hell. Instead, they were more interested in opening America's wallets. As spiritualism has grown in American culture, so too did the frustration with how long it took to get many meaningful messages out of the spirit, says Brandon Hodge, a historian of spiritualism. Calling out the alphabet and waiting for a knock at the right letter, for example, was deeply boring. After all, rapid communication with breathing humans at a distance was possible now. The telegraph had been around for decades, so why shouldn't spirits be easy to reach? People were desperate for methods of communication that were quicker. While several entrepreneurs realized that, it was the Kennard Novelty Company that nailed it. In 1886, newspapers reported on a new phenomenon taking over the spiritual camps in Ohio, and it was, for all intents and purposes, the Ouija board. With letters...
So, real quick... With all that being said, the way you just worded that could be another reason why you could convince me Ouija boards are bad.
That it was like monetized?
Or no, more so on the lines that
it fast tracks communication.
It fast tracks.
Yeah.
Once because it like it's taken a shortcut into something that now that I think about it. like back in the day, like with shamans and stuff, like that was a cherished ability. Like that took grooming to do. Like you had to earn your ranks through it and
yep.
and everything. Like it was a big deal. And then the fact that they decided to shortcut it, maybe that's where it starts getting muddy.
And mass market it.
Yeah.
Yep. So again, we went through like what the Ouija board is with the letters and the numbers and the planchette to move it around. Charles Kinnard, who had visited some of these spiritualist camp, saw a business opportunity. In 1890, he pulled together a group of four other investors, including Elijah Bond, a local attorney, Washington Bowie, a surveyor, and they decided to start the Kinnard Novelty Company, which would exclusively make and market these new talking boards. But first, Kinnard's talking board needed a name. Contrary to popular belief, a Ouija is not a combination of the French word yes, which is oui, and the German equivalent ja, which is Ouija, which would be yes, yes, kind of an answer to the board. According to Robert Murch, it was Bond's sister-in-law, Helen Peters, who Bond said was a strong spiritualist medium who supplied the now instantly recognizable handle. The lore goes that when she asked the board what its name should be, the board spelled out a Ouija. So the board picked its own name. Which,
but the name is different now, correct?
No, it's the same. It's O-U-I-G-A. Ouija.
Okay.
It's pronounced. So,
pronounced yeah. is different then.
She okay. didn't, she didn't recognize it, so she asked what the word meant, and the board spelled out good luck. Which is kind of creepy.
That's ominous.
Kind of creepy. According to Murch, interviews with descendants of the Ouija founders, an original Ouija patent file itself, which he'd seen, the story of the board's patent request was true, which I need to get into now. The men knew, so they went to go get it patented. They knew that they would not get this patented unless they could prove that the board worked. So Bond brought the Ouija board to the patent office in Washington, D.C. when he filed for his application. There, the chief patent officer demanded a demonstration. If the board could accurately spell out his name, which was supposed to be unknown to Bond and Peters, he'd allow the patent application to proceed. They set up the board, they communicated with spirits, and the planchette successfully spelled out the patent officer's name. Whether it was mystical spirits or maybe like Bond kind of knew who the patent officer was, regardless, they got the patent. So it's kind of an interesting lore also behind the Ouija board. It picked its name. It secured its own patent. Makes it kind of strange.
I did hear about the patent, but I didn't know that it picked its own name.
Let me see where else we got here. The first patent describes the device, but offers no explanation to how it works. That ambiguity was part of more or less a conscious marketing effort. They were very shrewd businessmen, says Robert Murch. The less the Kinnard Company said about how the board worked, the more mysterious it seemed, and the more people wanted to buy it. Ultimately, it was a moneymaker, and they didn't care why people thought it worked. And it was a moneymaker. By 1892, the Kinnard Novelty Company went from one factory in Baltimore to two in Baltimore, one in New York, or two in New York, two in Chicago, and one in London. So now you're mass producing Ouija boards in multiple countries. So you're really hammering them out now.
Yeah.
Soon after, Kinnard and Bond were out owing to some internal pressures and the old adage about money changing everything. By this time, a man by the name of William Fuld, who had gotten in on the ground floor of the business as an employee and stockholder, was running the company. So keep him in mind. We're going to go back to Helen Peters, who was Bond's sister-in-law, who was also a medium. As the board's popularity and profit increased, most of the early investors saw it out to highlight their role in the creation of the Ouija board, but Helen Peters wanted nothing more to do with it after the board caused serious damage to her family. When some Civil War heirlooms went missing from the Peters home, Peters asked the board who had taken them. According to Peters' grandson, the board indicated that a member of the family had. Half the family believed it. Half of the other family said bullshit, including Helen. The event created such a conflict that was never resolved and tore the family apart. After the fight, Peters sold all of her stocks in the company. Until her dying day, she was telling everyone, "Don't play the Ouija board because it lies," Murch said. So some more like weird Ouija board lore there. We're coming back to Mr. William Fuld. William Fuld has his own Ouija-related family troubles. In 1919, he cut his brother out of the business, and the two never spoke again. That year was a particularly good year for sales, because as I'd stated before, the sales spike around tragedy. Because you have World War I and the mass flu epidemic that went through, killed a bunch of people. People wanted to contact the dead. In a 1920s article, the New York Times compared the popularity of a Ouija board to that of bubblegum. That's how common it was.
That's nuts.
Crazy.
And also just by the background that you've ran, like, I'm not going to lie, the evidence seems to be mounting more and more as to why this might be a dirty thing.
These numbers are about to get real crazy. In 1927, the Baltimore Sun reported that Fuld had personally made $1 million from sales of the board.
Oh, shit.
For those keeping track, that's almost $19 million in today's money.
That's crazy.
So that's doing pretty good. Selling
some shit ass little
boards, spirit boards. He continued to open new factories, just raking it in, getting real greedy. The largest, a three-story building in Baltimore, after the Ouija board itself told him to build here and prepare for big business. In early 1927, after the build at the like crux of the building's construction, Mr. Fuld went up to the roof of the building to supervise the replacement of a flagpole for the American flag. According to the Baltimore Sun, he was standing near the edge of the roof, grasping an iron support of the pole to steady himself. The workman said, when the support suddenly pulled away from the pole and he toppled backwards over the wall, falling to his death.
It does seem like some shady shit's going on, man.
Yep.
Like he might have made a deal with something early on and he paid the piper for it, man.
Yep, it gets weirder.
Good.
Almost as if in a movie, Fuld initially grabbed hold of the sill of an open window, which suddenly closed, sending him crashing down to the sidewalk below. He had broken several ribs, but was expected to survive. Unfortunately, on his trek to the hospital, hit a massive pothole in the road, which sent one of the fractured rib bones directly through his heart.
Some Final Destination shit.
Final Destination Ouija board shit. The family continued to run the business until 1966 when they sold it to Parker Brothers, which was later bought by Hasbro, whose website warns, "Handle the Ouija board with respect and it won't disappoint you." The board's instant and now more 130 years later prolonged success showed that it had tapped into a weird place in American culture. It was marketed with both a mystical oracle, but also as family fun and entertainment. It kind of rode that gray area line where you can hang out with your kids and contact the dead, or you can use it to contact the dead.
That's really fucking strange.
Humans are weird, bro.
Weird selling point.
Humans are weird. So it was marketed both in mystical oracle and family entertainment, the fun element with a tinge of otherworldly excitement. This meant that it wasn't only spiritualists who got interested in the board now. In fact, people who disliked the Ouija board and most tended to be spirit mediums, which kind of leans the way you're going there, Kyle, as it promised access to the spirit world without a knowledgeable middleman. Now You just have everyday people being able to make contact, which apparently, I don't know if that was bad business for the mediums who were traveling around trying to offer their services or what the deal.
I could see that.
The Ouija board appealed to people from across a wide spectrum of ages, professions, and educational backgrounds. People wanted to believe. They needed to believe that something else is out there, and that need to believe is powerful, says Merge. This thing is one of those things that allows them to express their belief in the afterlife. It's logical then that the board would find its greatest popularity in uncertain times, as I had mentioned before, the 1910s and 20s after the devastation of World War I, and the Jazz Age and Prohibition witnessed a surge in Ouija board popularity. In 1920, Norman Rockwell, who is a very famous illustrator, everybody's seen Norman Rockwell's paintings, drew a picture of a couple with a Ouija board between them, which made the cover of the Saturday Evening Post. Over 5 months in 1944, as World War II raged, a single New York department store sold 50,000 Ouija boards.
That's crazy.
One in 5 months.
We are in the wrong business.
One damn department store sold 50,000 Ouija boards. In 1967, the year after Parker Brothers bought the game, 2 million boards were sold, outperforming Monopoly, which is the most popular board game in history. The Ouija board outsold it.
It's wild.
And that was in 67, which isn't that long ago.
It's really not.
Crazy. The same year saw American troops dying in Vietnam, the Summer of Love, and racial riots in cities across the country. So times of unrest really made people want to look to the afterlife for answers. Also, strange Ouija tales kind of started making their rounds, which kind of sort of led more people toward it, as they were posting weird Ouija stories in newspapers and across wire services. 1920 would-be crime solvers were turning to their Ouija boards for clues and about a mysterious murder in New York City. Gambler by the name of Joseph Bowne Elwell, which they didn't help. And all they did was really frustrate the police, but they were trying. They were trying. Which reminds me of like armchair detectives of today on the internet, yeah. Also doing similar things.
Yeah.
In 1921, the New York Times reported that a Chicago woman was sent to a psychiatric hospital after developing, quote, religious hallucinations induced by a Ouija board. She described how the situation developed. Quote, we started by getting sermons from beyond. We have hundreds of these sermons that we typewrote and preserved. They are hidden away from prying eyes. These sermons grew more and more beautiful. All of them came from the Ouija board. I myself was doubtful, but after the Ouija board had been talking to us for several days, we had to believe. And it's weird that this Ouija board psychosis really feels similar to what we have going on today with AI.
Oh, yeah.
Where people are looking to something beyond human realm for answers. It's like I was writing this and doing the research, the correlation between the two, I'm like, holy shit, you know, like you have people, because that's one of the AI psychosis is religious psychosis, where people think that the AI is a godlike deity. And this woman is getting sermons from what we assume is probably a godlike entity that made her also kind of lose it. What else we got? Similar incidents made appearances in the news for years. In 1941, a 23-year-old gas station attendant from New Jersey told the Times that he joined the Army due to spiritual advice. When officials at the recruitment office asked what gave him the idea of becoming a soldier, he answered, I want to learn a trade in the Army school, and my Ouija board told me that the Army was the place to do it. In 1956, a Connecticut judge heard a case of Helen Dow Peck, who left only $1,000 to each of her two former servants and a whopping $178,000 to one John Gale Forbes, a lucky but unfortunately bodiless spirit who contacted her via the Ouija board. So she left her entire inheritance to a spirit.
That the government probably collected.
I am not sure. I did find a case detail online from 56. It says March 12th, can the disposition of 180,000 estate be determined by a Ouija board? That is the question Judge Avarice P. LaVella of Bethel, Connecticut probate court will ponder Wednesday when briefs are filed in a contest over the will of Miss Helen Dow Peck of Bethel, the widow of a New York insurance broker. So it doesn't say what ended up happening, but it does say that her and her husband used to spend a lot of time contacting this spirit via the Ouija board, John Gale Forbes. So even like the nieces and nephews of them were like, hey, that should probably go to us, not to this Ouija board ghost.
Nah.
Like, no, don't worry about it.
Giving it to ghosts. What use does a ghost have with fucking dollar bills?
Apparently he needed them.
I guess.
He needed them. Other strange Ouija board things that have come across or kind of leans toward the AI is that they have offered literary inspiration. One of the most well-known is Pearl Curran. She made headlines when she began writing poems and stories that she claimed were dictated via the Ouija board. So that's very much AI-like, you know, having the Ouija board write your poems and them taken off.
It is a lot like AI.
And when I started seeing the parallels, I'm like, man, this is fucking weird. But she said that she was contacted by a 17th century spirit of an English woman named Patience Worth. Patience Worth was allegedly a disembodied spirit contacted by Curran. This purported relationship produced several novels, poetry, and prose, which Pearl Curran claimed were delivered through channeling the spirit Patience Worth. In 1912, she began using a Ouija board with a friend, Emily Grant Hutchins, leading to the alleged communication with the spirit. By 1913, she began delivering complex messages and vivid stories through Curran, who claimed to see detailed visions and receive messages from Patience. Patience claimed to have lived in England, possibly Dorsetshire, from 1649 to 1694, and described a voyage to America where she was supposedly killed by Native Americans. Over time, Curran moved from using the Ouija board to receiving spontaneous dictations from Patience, producing poems and novels and stories, many of which were critically acclaimed. Notably, The Sorry Tale was hailed as a literary classic by contemporary critics. So she's kind of benefiting from the spirit, which is kind of like the controversy behind AI right now. What else do I got here? The writings gained attention during the revival of spiritualism, though skeptics questioned their authenticity, especially since Patience wrote convincingly about eras that she hadn't lived in because she was already dead. The quality of the literature impressed many, with Patience being listed among the top poets of 1918. So Patience Worth, a ghost, was listed among the top poets of 1918.
I feel like that would take a hell of a long time to write down their poems.
Especially by Ouija board. No wonder she went to like direct contact, because just going.
Yeah, that would suck.
Yeah. Oh, what else do we got here? Not long after seeing Curran's success, Emily Grant, the other woman that was using the initial Ouija board when the contact was made, also began to start tapping into the spirit world to write books. She claimed that she was talking to Mark Twain and wrote a complete book called Jap Herron that she said was penned by Samuel Clemens, also known as Mark Twain, from beyond the grave. Interestingly enough, this was not nearly as successful. So take that for what it's worth.
So weird that they used it for literary terms.
And how do you claim things? You contacted one of the greatest writers in American history? Like, you got some big shoes to fill if you're saying that you're talking to, like, Mark Twain is writing this novel. Where
so weird.
Else Decades later, Pulitzer Prize-winning poet James Merrill surpassed both women in 1983. His Ouija-inspired epic poem, The Changing Light at Sandover, won the National Book Critics Circle Award, where he, in another weird parallel of like AI kind of Ouija board crossover, didn't say that a spirit from the Ouija board completely wrote the poems for him, but it just helped expand and magnify his thoughts, which people who use AI go that route a lot, like just kind of help you out. There are some other notable cases here. Let me find them. Rosemary Brown is a spiritualist where she didn't necessarily use a Ouija board, but I thought this was interesting because she claimed to have contacted spirits of great composers like Bach and Beethoven, and even wrote and composed music supposedly through them, which I thought was pretty freaking weird.
It's also weird that, like, what at one point was, I mean, it was considered a game, but it was also considered like a tool to communicate with loved ones. And then it turns into help me make money.
Yeah. Which is very American of us to do.
Yeah. And it, you know, you want to talk about poison in the well. I mean, there you go.
Yeah. I can see how it got a bad context. There's another woman by the name of Dorothy Jane Roberts, who's an American author and poet who claimed to be psychic and a spirit medium, channeling a personality who called himself Seth. Her publication, The Seth Text, also known as The Seth Material, established her as one of the preeminent figures in the world of paranormal phenomena. She started out contacting Seth via a Ouija board, but then also kind of moved to just direct contact. Let me see what else I got here to kind of clear this up a little bit. In a more recent, like a more recent time that we can kind of get behind, I'll finish it off with this, is the band The Mars Volta, which is still, I'm pretty sure they're still around today. Kind of were making their rounds when we were big into music, 2007 and stuff, wrote an album called The Bedlam and Goliath, where they said the concept and material for the album was given to them via a Ouija board. The frontman and one of his other bandmates were in Jerusalem at like this antique shop where they found this old Ouija board, which they bought, and they immediately started calling it the Soothsayer, which I figured is a weird, weird name.
It is weird.
They started contacting this spirit, and the spirit they called Goliath, and Goliath put out this tale, like this love triangle of these three people who ended up in murder, and all of it came supposedly from the Ouija board. But they also talk about like how it was the hardest record they have ever had to make because the studio flooded, and then a bunch of their recordings got deleted, and like their sound producer, who was like their main guy for the rest of their albums before that, just kind of had a mental break and took off. So they had to re-find somebody else. And it was just,
sounds like some bad juju.
Yeah. Bizarre. So people don't know if this was a marketing ploy by them or if this is legit, but to this day, they have still steadfast that the inspiration for this album came to them from the Ouija board they found at an antique store in Jerusalem.
That's wild.
So I figured I'd just kind of touch on that. There's not like, there are some dark spots there, but it kind of gave you a history of like, I don't know, spiritualism and spirit writing and the Ouija board and stuff. Next week, I'm going to delve into some darker stuff, like cases of murders and things that the Ouija board has kind of instigated, or people have instigated via the Ouija board, kind of like the Gulf Breeze 6. Remember how the Ouija board told her, hey, you got to go kill the Antichrist if you want to save the world. So kind of cases like that. So be sure to tune in next week to peep that. And then we'll see where it goes from there because it gets weird.
Hell yeah.
So we'd love to get your everybody's kind of thoughts on Ouija board and spirit contact and spirit writing and just communication with not even the dead, but communication with other realms as a whole. How are we feeling about the holocore? How are we feeling about it? So leave us some messages in the chat, in the comments, in the emails. Let's talk about it. So thanks for hanging out with us this Monday. Hopefully this got your wheels turning and burning. And until we meet again, remember, check us out on our social media. Stay safe, stay weird, and if you're in the contact with the dead, just don't, you don't have to monetize it. You don't have to make a board game about it. Try to get rich. I mean, you could, but it's whatever.